frequencies. Can't get a break anywhere. But yeah, we had Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Are we live?
Yeah, we're live.
We're live! No, we had Thanksgiving. I was talking to someone about, just like Columbus Day. Everybody's like, Columbus, no one disrespect Columbus in this house. he's a saint. He's a saint. And then it's, the whole thing. But it would, the pilgrims came here and they came here for religious freedom. They were zealots. They were the pure, the pilgrims. They were called the separatists.
Yeah.
So basically, Roger. The Tredenbogel. The pilgrims get here and they land on Plymouth Rock. What is those Droidekas?
Droidekas.
They were so bad. Got kicked out of England. They went and they go to Netherlands. They go to the Netherlands, Holland, and they go there. And apparently, Holland was kind enough to let them come there. And then they're like, "Oh, they're too liberal. We got to get out of here." So they get on. They were supposed to end up in Jamestown, the first permanent colony here, but they ended up like missing the mark by like 500 miles and ended up in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, wherever, Plymouth Rock. It's just a rock. It's not even like something like it's not, when you think rock, you think like I was at there's a big, massive rock in the English Channel. That was like technically it's a territory, even though it's just a giant rock.
The Rock of Gibraltar.
No. It's in the English Channel. Actually, it's like it looks like the Legion of Doom base. It's like meanwhile the Legion of Doom. I forgot the name of it, but it's like water. The water is like eating away at a lot of it from the erosion.
There's the Eddystone Rocks.
I believe it might be that. Something like that. But it's just one giant hunk of rock. It's lame. These are religious zealots that came over here. So America, when you think about it, America truly was founded by terrorists and zealots.
Yeah.
We are what the Middle East could be in a couple hundred years' time. But it won't be because we didn't have the ability to blow ourselves up to the same degree. It's like kids back in the day. Yeah, they'd eat paint chips. They might put a fork in the thing now. Now they're just pretty much just brain dead. They play video games and on iPhones and iPads and stuff like that. But yeah, it's so dumb. But yeah, the whole I couldn't help but think somebody showed the footage of the Sonic the Hedgehog balloon from many years ago, like about 93 for the Macy Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah,
parade.
What happened exactly there?
Well, they had it, and it apparently it ruptured.
Yeah,
and it's like people like joked, it was an inside job. Nintendo, they shot Sonic, but he just got too close. The winds were blowing a little too hard. He got too close to a light pole, and it punctured the side of the balloon's head.
Sure.
And after he got punctured, the only thing I could think of was like back to the left. I couldn't help it. I shouldn't have been thinking these things.
But no one got hurt or anything, right?
I don't think so, but,
So why is it such a thing? I remember it popped up a couple of times in the past week.
I've never looked into it. Well, it's the whole Sonic being back in the zeitgeist of the movie and how they fixed the design so it doesn't look awful. And, the plight of modern animators, and someone showed the footage from that Irishman, the Scorsese.
Yeah.
Scorsese film, which I ain't gonna watch because I don't have Netflix, but the de-aging stuff they did for De Niro in there looks worse than Jeff Bridges and Tron Legacy. It looks worse than Xavier and X-Men Origins Wolverine, which is crazy. Both those movies, 2009.
See, I have a soft spot for Jeff Bridges in Tron.
I
for its time, it was amazing.
When he's not talking. Like scowling, fine, but when he starts talking,
But yeah. even now, they can't animate the top lip on anyone.
You saw that with Cavill.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Jim Hank Cavill. It would have been better if somebody, how hard would it be? You're telling me that the producers of Mission Impossible, they can, if they can make, they can give De Niro, Pacino, lifts and wigs. He's got his lifts, he's got his wigs. And if they can make Tom Cruise look like an actual normal-sized human being, then they could get, make a fake mustache. You're telling me that like, no, you can't shave a mustache. What are you talking about?
I think everyone knows where what's his face, Cavill's head was at. Dude was making a statement, that's all.
Yeah. They're all about this whole... It was just bait. But Forbes, the same people who, you know, made a stink with the whole, you know, YouTube stuff. Like, YouTube is allowing these alt-right people. Like, you know, it's because Forbes is old media, yeah. New media. Of course, got attacked. You know, nobody's putting money on our at giving us ad money. So we got to go after our competition because it's not, it's transparent. But they did a, I didn't even bother. I just the headline alone just says it all. It's like. Warner Brothers doesn't know what to do with Superman. What's the point of Superman? We've talked about this before. It's like, it's just a lack of conviction. The stories are there. The character can write itself.
You could come up with any number. The problem is that the studios don't seem to understand the simplicities about Superman. Same with The Flash. I was thinking about The Flash on the weekend. They keep portraying this sort of rickety, uncertain... boy child that, you know, questions everything and he's so skeptical about everything. I call bullshit. The Flash is a man who's thought everything you've already thought 1,000 times before. And you even get there.
Depends on which Flash. Like if you're talking about Barry Allen, you know, classic Barry Allen, Boy Scout guy, did everything. He went from being this on the nose, on time, dependable guy to being... Oh, he's showing up late all the time. He's doing all that kind of stuff. You know, yes, his job is not, you know, he's a lab technician.
Yeah.
So, but he's not like in the field. He goes to the field, but not that degree. But the reason he's so late is because he's out there, utilizing every single second he can to stop bad things from happening to the people of the city.
That's right.
Whether it's Central and or Keystone, like depending on which Earth timeline.
Justice League or Justice Society, yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, like Earth, you know, merged Earths or whatever. But like he's utilizing every single bit of time because he does know he has to lead a life because a life of nothing but saving people is not a life at all. You're not a person anymore. You're a machine. You're a machine for heroism. And at that point, what are you saving? You don't have loved ones. You don't have family. It's like, if you divorce yourself, and that's the thing about Superman, this is a guy who knows that it's like – that's one thing about the whole Superman doesn't kill. Technically, yes, he does. And action has killed people more times than not. So while he's off in the office, you know, messing around with Lois or Perry or listening to Perry talk about whatever and Jimmy Olsen's talking about this new camera he got. It's got this kind of low light thing. He's hearing. He's trying to focus on – Imagine if Superman. It'd be nightmarish when you think about it. It's like you'd have to focus on things in the office, like in that general area. It's like somebody chewing food, and you'd have to do this intentionally because if you didn't, imagine if you heard like a little girl crying or a man dying of a heart attack. He's laying on the floor, like help me, help. Like imagine how much that would drive you insane. Imagine if you heard like kids being beaten by their parents or horrible things happening in alleys. Parents doing, people doing drugs in the alley, and you're hearing, you're hearing them cook up, meth in crime alley.
Oh, even worse, Jimmy runs off to the bathroom with the latest copy of National Geographic, and all he hears is that.
Exactly. They got his sense of super smell. He'd smell bleach everywhere. It's like, ah.
Oh, it'd be like that thing about not turning on a UV lamp in a hotel room.
Oh, God, yeah. Just like everywhere.
Lois tries to take Clark out, for a weekend away. He's like, no hotels. She's like, what do you mean? No. He's like, no hotels.
Let's just go camping. Let's just go in the woods. At least the nylon.
Oh my God, what's someone done to this bear?
Oh no. It's true, like, that poor tree over there. But no, it's like, God, stay away from the camping tables. You know, there's things been done in those camping tables.
But that's exactly it. The whole audiovisual spectrum is an open book to him.
That's why I think I was talking to someone today about, you know, like if New 52 should have been basically Ultimate DC Comics. It should have boiled everything down and made everything user friendly, like how in Ultimate X-Men Wolverine is mercenary. He's a guy who basically he doesn't have any allegiances.
Yeah, I still think they dropped the ball with Ultimate Wolverine.
Yeah, they should have kept him a villain. He's a villain.
That, like, that was the weakest thing about.
They should have waited till about issue. Like, what they should have done is about issue 20 or so, have him turn.
Yeah.
Like, infiltrate, let nobody know, because the adamantium that you can't read his mind or something. Yeah. Like, you know, that would have been cool. The fact that you can physically stop him, but mentally, psychically, like, Jean Grey could stop him because she could use her telekinesis.
Well, there's the other problem. Wasn't he shacking up with a 16-year-old Jean Grey?
Exactly. There is that. There's a lot of that stuff.
And I remember, like, feeling icky reading that.
And one thing about X-Men that they don't – this is why I love the Friends of Humanity. It's like somebody could argue that, yes, this guy right here, this bald creep in a wheelchair who's recruiting kids, who controls people's minds. So you're telling me these parents, oh, they signed a piece of paper. Xavier has – you know, the parents have said it's okay that their kids go with this guy who has powers to control men's minds, who can make them sign and do whatever they want, who is controlling a bunch of teenage weapons. These are child soldiers in his own private war against a Holocaust survivor. Yes, the Holocaust survivor, yes, he did kill people. They killed his family first. He was a guy, he was trying to be a man of peace. He was a man of peace until they murdered his wife and child, and then he had to go and slaughter everybody else, and, you know, he thought his wife was dead, and then turns out she got, you know, taken in by the high evolutionary and everything like that. It's
you know what I'd do if I was a manipulative telepath? Every day I'd change one thing about someone's psyche. Just every day, just one thing. To the point where after a year or so, I don't even need the telepathy anymore. They're mine.
Well, slowly. It's like turning a dial. It's like the right thing. It's like, there you go, perfect. It's just adjusted to the point where, but yeah, it's these characters. Like, when you think about certain aspects, like Superman, like the idea I have for Superman was like, if I had Superman to start from scratch, it would be more akin to the Fleischer animated series version, the '90s animated series.
Perfect. The rules are in the titles.
But here's the thing. This is mine would be a bit different. He is, you know, like, take the best elements possible. Because the idea of, you know, him coming to Earth, the Earth's atmosphere was different. The yellow sun radiation is different for his body. So as a baby, he had a tough time. He wasn't just flying around the room and doing all this and that. He was like, it was sick, but there was nothing the country doctors could do. But eventually he acclimated to the environment. And my hypothesis is, as Kryptonian biology, he can breathe oxygen, but it was painful for him. The nitrogen-oxygen mixture was painful for him as a child, but he adapted to it.
Sure.
Like a human would to their environment. So as he grows up, his skin's tougher, he's stronger, he has to push himself. It's kind of like the Unbreakable mindset. It's like, where he might be tough, but he's never really pushed himself. You know, like Bruce Willis didn't push himself till later in life.
Yeah. But
Clark would be doing this in high school. It's like, you know, come on, you know, you got to climb this rope. And he's like, find out he's a lot faster than everybody else. He's like, oh, if I can start practicing. And this idea that I would allow him to go to space, but he can only go to space for so long because he has his body is trying to expand, like, you know, like you would in space. Like, you know, even though he's drinking in that solar radiation, he can only go into space for so long before his cells start breaking down from the vacuum trying to suck the oxygen out, and he has to breathe out, get the oxygen out of his lungs, or his lungs will turn inside out. But the oxygen is actually, his cells can hold the oxygen molecules, his blood cells can hold the oxygen molecules longer than a human's, but still they will run out and he'll lose consciousness. So he will be floating in space. And I was like, that'd be a cool aspect. So he'd have to either rely on some, you know, kind of like a Green Lantern or some other space-based hero, or have shield technology, spacesuit, air mask, or something like that, like they did in the cartoon, like where it made a little bit, you know, it was marketing for toys, but it also made sense. The other thing I said, okay, if space does that to him, what about like deep the pressures of like the Marianas Trench? And maybe he finds out by going down and like to the ocean, like, you know, like 2,000 feet, he starts feeling the pressure. Where normally a man would be killed by that. No, you know, no ordinary man could survive. They'd be crushed in like to a size of a coffee can or something. But he slowly, he's got to, it's kind of like Goku-ifying Superman.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It sounds exactly like the gravity capsule training.
Exactly. See that right there? I think you can take these aspects of Superman where Superman has been, Superman is based off of the book over here, but it's called Gladiator by Philip Wiley. And that, it really, if you think about it, that is, you know, you have the religious stuff, you know, you have Gilgamesh, you got your Samson, yep. You know, all that kind of stuff. But then this character, Abednego Danner, he was from, he had a son, he was a scientist, and he injected his wife, pregnant wife, with this serum. Before he injected his wife, he injected tadpoles. One of the tadpoles broke out of a glass jar. He injected a pregnant cat, and the kittens were born with the super strength, and these kittens were able to take down cattle.
Yeah.
So he gathered the kittens up and drowned them because they were just too, you know, they're too wild. And so he injects his pregnant wife with the serum. She finds out about it, and because she's religious, she won't divorce him, but she hates him. But she will stay there for the child. And they tell their kid, don't hide what you can do, because people will be frightened of what you could do. It's basically Man of Steel, the novel,
yeah,
from 1930. And in it, he's like 6 years old, running around the woods of Colorado, and it's like takes place in like 1899, 1900, tearing down trees. There's a part where a guy, his cart, one of the wheels falls off his cart, and he's trying to jack it up to get the wheel back on, and the cart falls on him, and he's like 6 years old. He comes out of the woods, lifts the cart up off of the guy's head. This is 1930 that the novel came out, and then later on in the comic adaptation too. But later on in the novel, there is a scene where there's these criminals, and they're basically thugs working for a bank, because he's like, I'm gonna try to just live like a normal guy. I'll work bank security, and a guy gets locked in the vault,
mm-hmm.
and there's no way to open it up, and he's like, rips the vault door off, and they're like. He's a vault thief. We knew he's a bank robber. So these thugs show up with guns, and he knows the bullets can't hurt him. But they're torturing him, kind of Daniel Craig, Casino Royale style, and he's having to act like it hurts.
Yeah.
And then eventually they kind of go too far. He's like, "All right, I'm done." He picks the car up that they're in, and it's, you know, there you go, the Superman.
Yeah.
But the best thing about that book is it deals with one of those aspects, like, you know how Superman, like, you know, in the back in the Golden Age, they had him doing the whole, you know, slap a jap, you know, all that kind of stuff, you know, the buy war bonds, all that deal, you know, he could easily go into Germany, grab Hitler and everything like that. Well, in this novel, Hugo Danner ends up playing football. Sounds like another character I know. He ends up playing football, accidentally kills a player.
Oh.
He is so it destroys him. So he's like, I got to get out of here. He gets on it. He ends up in the Mediterranean as a pearl diver, and because he could dive deeper than anybody else, grabs these pearls and making money off of that. And because he ends up having skin like bronze, which predates Lester Dent's Doc Savage.
Yeah.
So there's that. And that's a predate, you know, because Doc Savage had a Fortress of Solitude, Superman a Fortress of Solitude. So it all kind of leads back to Gladiator by Hugo, by Philip Wiley. But World War I breaks out. So Hugo and his buddy are like, we're going to enlist in the French Foreign Legion. They end up in the front lines. Hugo's buddy, they go over the top, and as Hugo's buddy gets blown away, Hugo gets hit by an artillery shell.
Yep.
Artillery shell splits him up. First time he's ever felt pain in his life. He's got a piece of artillery shell shrapnel in his arm, bleeding. His clothes have been exploded away because his body's basically explosive, bulletproof. His buddy's dead. The soldiers are dead around him. He's in no man's land. I'm just imagining this scene, like, no other times we play Battlefield 1. this like no man's land barbed wire. It's gray, nightmarish, explosive, and he for the first time ever he's mad.
Yeah,
he gets up, stark naked, covered in blood and mud, and probably a little bits of ruinous clothes. Starts running, and he can run fast, like 40, 50 miles an hour, which in comic book terms, oh, that's slow, but it just in reality, imagine a guy running as fast as like a car on the highway.
Yeah.
Running through barbed wire, the barbed wire wrapping around him. He jumps into the German trenches, and it describes him ripping apart German soldiers with his bare hands, just tearing them to pieces. Eventually, he makes his way through the lines. They come over, take them up. What the hell happened? They see him naked. They don't know what the deal was. They get him, clothed and everything. They bandage him up, but, of course, he heals up pretty quick. He decides, I'm going to end this war. He takes a plane, hijacks it, loads it down with explosives. He's going to go kill the Kaiser. He's going to suicide bomb because he knows he can survive it. And by the time he does this, that's when armistice is declared.
Yeah.
And he's just trying – and it's one of the most fascinating – it's one of those things like the reality of the world. It's like that works for a novel. That works for a finite story. Superman's a character, if you make him too powerful – it makes the world, and like same thing with Batman to the whole point, finite stories or these characters, same thing with the X-Men, work better than the never-ending open world shared universe.
Yeah. It's
shared universes, open world, never-ending, ongoing series. Honestly, I've lost interest. I don't know about you, but I could care. I want something that has an end to it. I want something that has like beginning, middle, end, boom, done. Just call it quits.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely a merit to that, and you get less people writing by the seat of their pants. So I think that was the difference with serialized entertainment up until the 80s, if not more recent, was even serial stuff had an arc in mind. Stories were written with a first, second, and third act in mind. It's only the phenomena of television and... getting things out there ASAP, as quick as possible before, the executive producers move on to the next thing, of selling pitches and ideas to studios and producers based on a one-sentence elevator pitch. That's what's created the J.J. Abramsing of things. Let's actually release content. Let's film and release content without an ending for it ever conceived.
That's very accurate because you're dealing with people now that bullshit, utter bullshit that was lost. What pissed me off, I was suckered into it. I was like hooked. I was like, because you can have a good ending. You can have I'd rather have something than nothing. What I got was nothing. What I got was it's not the explanation of the journey. It's the journey itself. It's not, because how they'd answer questions with more questions. Like they'd just do stuff just right. Like, oh, what's the deal with the time traveling? This. What's the deal with that? What's the deal with the statue? So is this good versus evil? Is this Atlantis? Nothing's explained. They could have said, yes, this place. People confused this with Atlantis. It was a place of ancient societies. You could have just, not said it bluntly like that. You could have had somebody possessed by a goat. Like, it's just about the journey. So all these flashbacks, which majority of them were pointless. And it was just like, oh, to find out who these characters are. It's like, imagine if you had to, re-dossier. It's basically flashbacks are equivalent to dossiers on people. It's like, you can't show me who that character is. You can't show me on that the island, the character. Okay, to one person, he's nice and kind and this and that. To these other people, he's a bastard, behind the scenes. How people really are. It's like your family functions and you're happy and nice and everything's good and you're getting on cordially. But mine's like, this son of a bitch. If I weren't related to him, I'd throw him in jail or something like that. I don't know. Something along those lines. You'd like to see him, thrown in jail. I don't know. But
the problem with Abrams and Lost personified it, is he's a liar.
Yeah.
He and his team of producers and writers,
Lindelof, yep,
Kurtzman, Orci, they all said time and time again, we have a clear plan for what we're writing, this is all going to plan, This is all going to end. And then after the fact, after the abysmal finale to the series, they came out and said, oh, we were kind of in the last season writing as we went.
You were writing how you went from the season one onwards.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the thing. It's like, and also that show proves shorter seasons would have been better and actually a story in mind. But you look who worked on that thing. You had Brian K. Vaughan, Paul Dini, like Jeff Loeb, a couple other people in there too, these comic people.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what happens? Oh, yeah, the writers and producers of the show end up writing comics. Funny how that works. It's like, you know, it's kind of like...
Yeah, well, they never have to worry about an ending.
Exactly.
Endings are hard. It's the hardest thing to write.
Not to me. Like, ending... like.
Yeah, but you start with... and in fact, if I remember correctly, you start with ideas and concepts, yeah?
I have ideas and concepts, and I find the ending, then I find the beginning, then I find... It's like, you have... I find the... the general idea, like a very nebulous idea, then I find some. It's usually somewhere in the center, mm-hmm. you know, like the not necessarily the middle of the story, but you know, usually in that general vicinity. Then I'll have the ending in mind, and then I'll have the beginning in mind. Like his beginning, like I stuff I'd avoid is like the whole. Do you ever see well, I know you know the right Alex Garland. He did 28 Days Later, Dread. He did that Annihilation. He did Ex Machina. And that movie Annihilation, which I didn't see it. I just watched that Fox's Productions did a video on it, kind of skewering it a little bit. And how...
is that the Natalie Portman one?
Yeah, that's the one. A bunch of unstable women go into like an unstable zone. I didn't either, but the movie is one of those that starts out with it starts out like current time and then does flashbacks, like so you know the character's in no danger. It's like you can't even give you it's like superhero movies. Oh yeah, like really, Spider-Man's gonna die in this movie, you know, that kind of stuff. It's like, yeah, that's not gonna happen, but you could have characters in peril and like, you know, you play along with it a little bit more, but there is there's an asterisk. I will not do that in my stories. I hate the idea. But the fact that they didn't even come up with something, some kind of answer, that, oh, this place is the heart, you know, was the first, I don't know. This is, the island is the spirit of Gaia. It's a spirit of the earth, like the spirits of the earth. All the dead reside here. Spirits of the dead reside here. Everyone that's ever lived is like, you know, oh, weird shit happens. Imagine you're walking through the woods and like it's nighttime and you see a guy in like Centurion armor or something.
Yeah.
Like you see a bunch of like dead soldiers or something. Like, you know, like you have like a flashback, like you're dreaming of a World War One or something. What's going on here? And you find, you know, like this, it out that that's where all the dead come. It's there's somebody that has like, well, what's the whole point? Somebody wants to release the numbers thing where you got to press this button or the island will blow up. The whole thing is because they came to the island, they tapped into basically the Well of Souls.
Yeah.
And they cracked it open. And they're like, oh no, and it's about to burst. But they were able to cover it up. But the problem is they got to, like, you know, something broke. And so they got to keep pressing a button, which, you know, looks like one of those, like, experiments where they got to, you know, like the kind of the prison experiment stuff, you know, like the, we call it Pavlov kind of experiment a little bit, whatever. But if they don't, the spirit, the well, like it's basically like the chamber from Ghostbusters. It's like the containment unit.
Right.
If they don't do that, the earth spirit will die. The spirits will leave. And the whole, there's people that want that to happen. It's like, you're not truly dead. You're just trapped here. And it's like, you don't realize that this is, they're in the afterlife. It's like if heaven is a bubble, they're not inside the bubble. They're on the edge of it in a way. So it's like you crash into all these ancient civilizations found their ways here, like trying to exploit it, exploit heaven, exploit the afterlife. Mm-hmm. I'm like, to me, give me that answer. It's a little ropey. I'd rather have that answer than, no, that didn't matter. The journey mattered. So you're telling me we did a dedicated whole episode how Jack got his tattoo. Ooh, the tattoo means outsider. No, you know, unless he's from another universe or something, like, or, you know, something along those lines. No, that's never explained. Who cares? It doesn't matter. Oh, the statue of the three toes? Oh, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You could have said, yes, that's, no, I'm not. Oh, it's the, Sobek, the alligator, deity.
Yeah.
The Egyptian. Something. Give me something.
But, they were, A, riding by the seat of their pants and responding to what was raiding. Because that's what kept the money coming in. That's what kept them earning the cash muller.
That's another thing. Have you ever seen a commercial where, like, I can't really think of any commercials like in the modern day where I've seen, I'm like, yeah, I gotta go and buy that. I see commercials as annoyance. So the idea of commercials in general is like, I'm gonna buy milk no matter what. Buy bread, buy hamburger, chicken, turkey, ham, pork products, whatever you want to call it. You know, ham, sausage, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Seasonings, salts, salt, pepper, garlic, oregano, stuff on his lines. I'm not out there buying a $40,000 car. I'm not out there buying a brand new TV. I'm not out there buying iPhone. I'm not out there. The stuff they market and advertise, alcohol especially, you know, all these ads, I'm not buying it. And it makes me wonder, who is? I know people are, but I like to think the majority, it's like it's a shell game. Or it's not shell game, it's like more like they throw their money out there thinking it actually does something. And it's just like part of the, it's like a scam.
Yeah.
Advertising is a scam. It's like,
I know reminds me of a conversation I had with someone a couple of weeks ago. I can't say too much about them. But they have a production role, an executive production role on a television show here in Australia on a major network show. And I was teasing them about ratings and why they're still beholden to such an old fashioned metric. It doesn't work. It's a paper based system that relies on the feedback of a less than a handful of viewers, and is so susceptible to corruption and sway and even just misunderstanding and misappropriation. And I was told that it will not change. It will be the last thing to change in TV, will be the rating system. It will not change until it gets irreparably broken, because it's what keeps the advertisers' money in. So really, the ratings is less about how well a show goes and more just about having a tangible metric to sell advertising space.
That's all it is. You know, they're talking about now. I was listening to something, I can't remember what, this podcast or a show on YouTube or something. I don't mention, because since everybody has a streaming app now, you got Disney Plus, you got CBS, you got Netflix, Amazon.
But they don't even use them for ratings.
No, they're going to go to that. That's the rumor, that they're going to go to Nielsen ratings, just like everything else. That event, because how do you judge? It's like, you know, outwardly, when everybody is signing up for these, like, Netflix had canceled another show and somebody, you know, people were pissed off or whatever. And Netflix has done this time and time again. They canceled, it was Mystery Science Theater 3000,
I never watched the first one, but this new one sucked. Major tank.
This is the third variation of it. There was the Joel Hodgson era, which I never really cared for. I'd maybe put it on. I was more of a Mike Nelson guy. He was on the site. That was a sci-fi American channel.
None of it really worked for me, but I could see the appeal of the older ones.
Yes, the older ones had appeal to it. Like the ones, like the best one, still hands down my favorite, is Space Mutiny, which is the red brown action flick that's they either paid for or borrowed heavily. They either paid for or stole. The old Battlestar Galactica TV series, they use like massive amounts of footage, like to pad out the film.
Yeah.
And there's a part, Red Brown, who was in, he was the first Captain America. He's the 70s Captain America.
The one on the motorcycle with the big shield.
The motorcycle. I kind of love that. It's so dumb. It's like, he's in the back of a van. He's like popping wheelies on him. It's great. It's great. 70s vans are a big thing here in the States. But he, in Space Mutiny, there's a part where there is a chicken, a duel. And he's in this, like, it basically looks like a go-kart with, like, wooden panel sides. And he goes, and then climbs out of the car. It can't, like, roll out of it. He's got to physically, he yells, stops, gets up, and then jumps out of the car. The cart crashes, flips over. It's like, it looks like a tiny, like, floor waxer. People, you know, it's like, real, it's terrible. And apparently, they're continuity of that. Terrible continuity errors. Like, there's a character that dies, and like 5 minutes later, there's a scene on the bridge, and the camera's like panning, and you see her at her workstation. It's like, she's not just like, oh, back of her head. You see her face. She's at the workstation in the Sense Theater 2000. Hey, wait, she's dead. it's just pointing stuff out, and the like, he has these terrific yells. Oh yeah, woo! It's like something's wrong with him. It's great. It's great stuff. But yeah, the new stuff, it's like, oh, we're upset we got canceled. Like, what do you expect? You know, like, in this modern age, people are like, well, it took a while for the other season to catch on. You don't got that patience in this day and age. You don't got two. They had two seasons. They already got the Mystery Science Theater people that were going to pay for Netflix, right? Yeah. That's the theory. You know, you signed up for this specific show. You don't got time to screw around. You got to nail it. If you can't. No, three strikes, you're out. It's one strike and you're out. That's all you get.
But it doesn't help that it was some of the most cringeworthy TV. And from what I understand, Mystery Science Theater made sense when it was sort of a very alternative, independent production as opposed to one of the biggest things on Netflix.
See, they used to be able to... The reason it didn't really work, apparently, as well, because international things. They can license stuff for U.S. audiences.
Yeah.
But getting stuff that's okay to show and... different territory. That's why piracy is a thing. Yeah. Oh, you can't show it. You can show it in America and Canada, but you can't show it in UK or Australia or New Zealand. That's just wrong. But you show it in Australia, New Zealand, and UK, but you can't show it in America because of licensing agreements. And also, like, lawyers and executives. It's like, if a purge happens, they're going. they're getting gone.
It's just that. No, you can't watch this because we haven't found out how to. Get out taste. That's
taste
all it
of the
is.
Taint. Taste of the taint.
Okay, if it's on paid merchandise, I kind of understand that. But when it's a bloody YouTube clip, when it's a freaking SNL clip that is, you know, a week later entered the zeitgeist, the pop culture zeitgeist, then everyone should have the right to see that clip. No one should have the right to have high definition audio visual Blu-ray transfer of it. You get to pay for that. But the way culture works, it works so quickly now. Look at Baby Yoda, for instance. Baby Yoda is all anyone will remember from the Mandalorian TV series now, whether it's good or bad. Baby Yoda, it's just entered the zeitgeist. It's entered pop culture and it's there. Now, that's all well and good, but when Disney comes in and then tries to retract and redact and take down any animated GIFs of Baby Yoda, well, that suddenly shows a massive misunderstanding of how this works and what they themselves have unleashed.
This is the modern world we live in right now. I was watching something because we're having the Democratic debates here in the States, like Democratic candidates. And the only one I could see myself voting for, if I was going to vote for one of them, would be Tulsi Gabbard. The one you see, like, oh, she looks like she's in her 40s. She's like 38. It's like whatever. I like her. Got the little rogue thing going on right there. she looks more like Sage. I think she looks more like Sage from Extreme X-Men.
Okay.
A little bit like
it's a deep pool.
I know, but I was listening. She was on Joe Rogan, And but yeah, it was, you know, hearing her talk about certain, there's some policies I'm not too fan of. The whole DACA stuff, deferred action for childhood arrivals, which is basically like if illegals jump the border, bring their, like, you know, 5-year-old kids with them. Well, let's not kick the kids out. I'm like, no, they're illegal too. Go. I have no sympathy. I have no sympathy. You know why? Because they wouldn't have had the sympathy from my ancestors coming here. Hey, Bela Lugosi tried to jump the border. He was a merchant after World War I. He tried to come here illegally. He came here illegally. They found him and they kicked him out. And he had to come in here. He had to do the legal way. Oh, the system screwed up. You know, would you do this to the other immigrants and this and that? Yes, because it's a broken. Like, we don't have. There's no jobs here, and the jobs are here are getting worse. It's like those that are working. They consider part time work. Full, like they consider, they count that as not being, well, you're not unemployed. You only work 20 hours a week, but you're not unemployed. You can't provide for your family at 20 hours a week because everybody's working a bunch of part-time jobs. And if you work only a certain amount of hours at certain businesses, they don't have to pay you insurance. They don't have to cover your insurance or any kind of benefits. Or it's a scam. It's all juking the stats. And
I see some benefits with keeping the kids. No, I don't think they should be separated from their parents, but
no, they go back with them. I would look at it this way. They go, they turn 18, file, you know, maybe put them at the top of the, you know, a different pile above, you know, potential, you know, immigrants. Like, okay, you got a clean criminal record. Okay, you kept your nose clean. Okay, sure thing. But when you don't know who's coming in, that's the big thing. And there's people like they want. There's certain candidates that want to give free health care to even non-citizens.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's like 350 million Americans, like official, like citizens, and you're talking at least 20 and probably 40 million undocumented.
But is your country still relying upon growth for economic propagation?
You mean population growth?
Yeah.
No, it's that right there is the economic stuff now is service industries.
Oh, right.
Which is kind of point, like, give it 5 years. Like, they've already pretty much rolled out. Most shopping centers have, you know, like, well, most grocery stores have the kind of prefer, like, basically you text in your order, use their little app, and they bring it to your curb. And there's only so many people that can do that. They only have so many spaces in the parking lot for that kind of thing. There's a lot of self-checkout. There's a lot of machines doing stuff nowadays. The kiosks at fast food restaurants.
They can't make a robot to clean a motel room, though.
No, there was a place I used to stay.
They can't make a robot that can hide a midget stripper at 3 a.m. in the morning in Arizona.
Well, I don't think there would be. You know, maybe at a fancy place, you know, the whole other story. But the places that end up do getting, like, you know, like I said, you know, being able to hire that basically cheap labor, they end up becoming family businesses. There, I talked to a black woman. She ran it was not a hotel. It was a small chain. She ran one of these people. She's no longer in that line of work. Moved on to much more lucrative sides of things, and she was telling me how there are groups, families, usually from India, that will come in and take over and hire family and basically get, you know, bringing them in, which, you know, that's common.
Yeah.
But then bed bugs will propagate because you have to think these are people coming from a third world country where you have the rich and the poor. It's like super rich, super poor, defecating in the streets. You're starving to death, even though there's a cow right there in front of you because of religious reasons. If I was starving, I'd take a chainsaw to that sucker. I'd cut his head right off. I cut me off a big old leg, and I'm like, I use a chainsaw's whip, and I'm like, this is coming with me. I don't want to have to fight no one. Just like revving up the chainsaw as I'm back away, hoping I don't run out of gas. But yeah, these are. When you bring these people in, where and this sounds weird to say because it happened to my side of the family, well, my son, in my family, on sides of my family, the I like to call it cultural bullying, where you the more prominent elements of people's ethnic origins, their regions they're from, kind of get beaten, not out of them, but beaten down, so they're not as prominent. You know, you don't, you know, you, you know, you, but you still keep some of the better elements, like certain foods, certain traditions, but you're not as, you don't have much of a chip on your shoulder, as it were. You know, that's how, you know, we got, where, you know, they're, the side of my family, they made like Eastern European meals, lots of cabbage-based stuff, and
as you do. It's
which is not my thing. I learned at a young age, like, I hate cabbage, I hate sauerkraut, I hate the rest of that stuff.
Oh, really?
It smells like farts and ass. I'm not getting anywhere near it. But and the one time it did smell halfway decent. The reason it smelled decent because they overused garlic on it, and apparently the garlic for some reason just like overwhelmed that horrible cabbage smell.
Cabbage also good with cheese.
Oh, you make me sick, man. I'm thinking now it's like sauerkraut with some like melted cheese on it. It looks like cow guts. It looks like the insides of a tauntaun.
Nice, I'm down.
But call tauntaun surprise. There you go. But now that you have advocates, you have lobbyists, you have people that were in the. You had when my great grandfather came here. From part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, it would have been we're still not 100%. I'm pretty sure it's Bulgaria. It would be Bulgaria today. But he came here, spoke multiple languages.
Oh, so we're not talking like turn of the century. We're talking way before then.
1896, I think he got here.
Okay.
1896. So you're talking late 1800s. He got here, worked in a coal mine.
He wasn't Kaiser Wilhelm II, was he?
No, he was not. He was not. his name was Bartko, though. Bartko. Bartko. And he ended up, it was a variation of Bartholomew. But he worked in a coal mine. He spoke broken English, but he also spoke German, and he had to speak Russian because his wife was Russian. So he and his wife spoke only Russian, but because she was a stay-at-home wife, she took care of the household while he was out in the coal mines. That was a whole other story. And also worked the fields too. They had they eventually got enough where they had coal field or worked the field where they grew their own like vegetables and stuff like that, crops. And he coal mining in the early 1900s. No matter what, coal mining anytime is not an easy job. You know, even with modern technology, you're underneath the earth, it's hot. It's moist. If it's not hot, it's moist because of water. You know, because the drainage and stuff. You're like knee deep.
And apologies to any listeners intimidated by the word moist.
Moist. Moist. ASMR stuff.
And welcome to our ASMR listeners who like the word moist.
That's giving me creeps, man. But so he had to acclimate to the American. He had to acclimate to America, to the United States. He could not, just walk in here, speak nothing but German and Russian.
Sure.
You know, the kind of stuff or whatever dialect he spoke. Bulgarian, I don't know. I assume it's German. He was dead long before I was ever born. But apparently he was a mean bastard too. Broke my grandfather's hands. his wife did as well. So my grandfather got his hands broken twice by his parents. Once he had to put his hands on the table, and that's when his father he was hiding. Well, he was hiding from his father in a water barrel. His mother found him hiding. The water barrel had a wooden cap on it. And he was actually inside the water barrel hiding. He was that scared. But he was afraid to drown, so he had his hands outside. And she hit his hands while he's like that. So it, broke him across the nut. You know, I'm... He The first time he got his hands broken, he stole a mule because he was getting beaten. And he can't really ride a mule because he had the little reins on the mule around it. And you can't really grab onto it when your hand, you can't make a fist because your hands are broken.
But I bet in that water barrel, he found things were quite feucht, which of course is the German word for moist.
Apparently he did speak some Russian, but during the Cold War, he kept his mouth shut on that because, like that. I don't know if he'd be speaking Russian, even in a community sympathetic towards that stuff. You don't want to be anywhere near that. But I do. But
in which case, in a Russian wet barrel, he'd find the experience Vlazhny.
Well, that's creepier than the German, which is impressive. But
which word, listeners, do you find creepiest? Vlazhny, feucht, or moist?
I would say moist, the way you said it.
This has been your ASMR section for the Ant King Frequency.
There's something wrong with you, man. But
just the one thing?
Too many to count. But I do think that we need...
I think it's feucht, by the way.
But
that's my
situation. Yeah.
It's a feucht situation, yeah. Feucht sounds very feucht up.
Yeah.
It sounds like a very Jewish New Yorker saying, "Hey, get feucht. Feucht off over here."
Woody Allen, is that you? no, but it's I do think that people need to come when there needs to be an attempt at assimilation. And it doesn't have to be give up everything and just like, you know, rah, 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 America. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing wrong. America can do no wrong, da, da, da. But there's no attempt at that anymore because they can come in and they can speak press one for English, press two for Spanish, you know, Espanol. You know, and if you give somebody the easy way out, they'll take the easy way out. You know, and it's considering, you know, 100 years ago when Pancho Villa and his bastards are riding across the border, burning down American towns and killing American civilians. There was John Pershing, but Pershing and his troops were in a town. It was Columbia, New Mexico. It was like Pancho Villa and his Villistas. They came across the border, like they shot a pregnant woman. They were doing like horrific stuff. Burned down a hotel, but because they burned down a hotel, they underestimated the amount of American troops in the town.
Yeah,
and they had you might remember this gun from Battlefield 1, the Benet Mercy, the stick fed with it, like you put the stick, it's like the typewriter kind of thing.
Yeah,
they had a bunch of those, and they had them lined up the two streets. The hotel, which was burning, kept the night sky alight, and they were able to dial in targets. So these Villistas riding in on horseback, and to the point where they just mowing them down. And a husband and a wife, it's basically a war zone. And they had their newborn, and because they didn't have the cars, were just basically brand new at that point. It's like a Model T or something, some kind of drop top or whatever. And they had their baby, and they put the baby in the back. The husband's driving. The Villistas shoot him while he's driving. He gets shot like two or three times in the shoulder and in the back.
Yeah.
It ends up going like, and the wife has to take over, and they have to drive off road. And when imagine a modern car going off road. Imagine one of these old ones where it's just like hemp and it's like sewn together with baling wire and all that kind of stuff. And the baby ends up getting launched and ends up in the front seat and the floorboards of the front seat. It's okay, but. Yeah, I guess mine had a couple of extra soft spots in the baby's head, but they survived. And now it's like, no big deal. Yes, you're sawing people up with chainsaws south of the border, and you're killing, you know, Mexico is a failed state. But we're supposed to, just keep on coming. Keep on coming, because you know what? America needs more cheap labor.
Well, that's it. You guys aren't exactly cleaning toilets and
because you give us an option. That's the thing. you give, the, like I said, you give the people the easy way out, and they take it. I told someone, and I still believe this, I wouldn't exist, but I'd rather my ancestors that came here to rather stayed and fought for their own country. You know, revolt. You know what? Your country sucks. Do something about it. No, I got to pack up and leave. What?
Because that's what was done back then. Because the way propaganda worked was that you thought these other places were better, even though you were just basically falling into someone else's system, someone else's set of lies, you thought the grass is greener.
Which is a lie.
It's a lie. The world is a horrible place, or can be a horrible place, because the people that run it are horrible, horrible people.
You know, because America will fall. I have no doubt about that. Probably the next, we'll be lucky if we get another 20 years. Because it's not only, it's
and
funny.
Right now, the hands of the CIA operatives that are listening to this show are getting rather foiked. Oh, wow. Has this frozen? Yep, it's frozen. Thank you, CIA, for wrapping up the show early. Oh, wait, there you are.
I was like, uh-oh. you see, that's what happens. You see Bloody Mary in a mirror a couple of times. That's what happens. I hate to be such a pessimist about it, but, you know, we did it to ourselves. Like, there is that, that video I shared with you, the, Paul Harvey, that from 1965.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And yeah, where that part where he's talking about, you know, and I know, you know, that's been done before in a country that was facing economic depression and all this other stuff, and you think he's going to say Hitler, and he's like, no, it was like ancient China. And it's like, yeah, it's like, it's this, you know, it's the Battlestar Galactica, you know, Peter Pan thing. All this has happened before, and all will happen again. That's civilization for you. We do not learn from our mistakes. Hey, ancient Rome. Hey, what happened to ancient Rome? Oh, yeah, they got a little too reliant on slave labor. Well, we don't have slaves nowadays. We just have illegals who work for like $2 an hour or something. Or,
yeah. No, we have a massive slave trade, and they're called the middle and lower class.
Yeah. Well, what middle class? I mean, middle class pretty much is gone here in the States. Like, when I was a kid, I guess you could say I was middle class, and then it kept on getting lower and lower and lower, and like I was like, ugh. Even I could see it. I mean, it was, you know, going from, you know, I won't even say middle class, because like middle class to me, it's like where, you know, you can, I was like lower middle class, if anything. Like, hell, I'm bordering almost poverty. Yeah. And, but don't I ask for no pity party. But I'm just saying, it's like that's just the reality of it. They've, to the point where supposedly Democrats and these other candidates want to, oh, let's just pay people, give people money. Like, but the money's got to come from somewhere. Where does it come from? People's pockets. It comes from taxes.
Yeah.
You know, you want to give everybody health care. Oh, that sounds great when you have like 30 million people, but when you have 300 million and you take away the ability of people, you know, we want to get private insurance. No, you can't. We're going to outlaw that.
But the upper class thrives on two main conceits. And one, everyone knows. The first thing is, of course, that they blame all of the middle class's problems on the lower class. That's the first wall they've successfully been pulling over our eyes for centuries, and we still do it. We still blame the poor and the downtrod, the disheveled. We blame them for all our problems, saying that they make society a worse place. That's just a diversionary tactic, and they're just playing along to a part that they've been left no option but to play. But the second thing they do, and this is the most conceited, evil, maniacal part, and it's only really been in the last 50 years when you think about it, the second thing they've done is they've let the lower and middle class people think they have the right to buy the same experiences they buy, which is why you get people earning $18,000 a year spending $3,000 a year on the latest iPhone and its plan. which is why you get them buying cars new from the dealer, despite the fact they'll be defaulting in 6 months' time, which is why you get them buying Kanye West runners at $4,000 a pop, because they're being sold this you could be anything you want to be. You can be one of us. We're all the same. We're all equal. Root to root. It's a fantastic trick they've pulled, because it just keeps the money flowing upwards. There's no such thing as trickle-down economics. There's definitely what I like to call salmon economics, where somehow the money keeps skipping upstream.
Yeah, that's this whole, like, the trickle-down economics is garbage. If you want money to go up, give it to some poor people. You know what happened? TVs be bought, shoes be bought. You know, that money goes that person goes that person, and it keeps on going up the chain. It don't go down the chain.
It's going up the chain no matter what.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying, if you earn less than $50,000 a year, here's $2,000. You know what happened? That money be gone like that.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and it would go, and you want to see small business, local businesses, other stuff like that would see effect too.
You really want to fight the system? You really want to stop that money just going back into rich people's bank accounts? Every paycheck, take $10, $20 out, whatever you can afford, it doesn't matter, as cash, and you put it somewhere.
Yeah, because right now, what little I know about banks, if they default, we hear we have, but that can't happen. We got the FDIC, that's as good as the paper it's written on.
Mate,
that's
as someone who's worked in a bank, I've heard it from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
If ever things got so bad that we had to use the government guarantee, which is the same as your Federal Reserve guarantee.
Oh, there'd be nothing.
Yeah, if ever it got that bad that would have to come into effect, then it'd be too far gone.
Like this American $20 bill right here in this wallet, this $20 bill, which, you know what this says? Nothing. This is a piece of paper. It's a fancy piece of paper. It's not going to tear as easy as other stuff.
Yeah.
This means nothing. Gold, diamonds mean nothing. Gold's a good conductor, good for electronics. But guess what? Diamonds mean jack unless you're drilling. Diamonds mean as much. Like
gold arguably means a lot more because you can do a lot more practically with gold.
Yes, like I said, like the electronics and other stuff on those lines. But it jewelry, diamonds, paper. This is paper. But you have a security strip in here. You have like a hologram little ink. I'm like, this is garbage. This means nothing. But here's the thing, because people are like, oh, I'll kill for that 20. You throw this between two homeless bums and say, hey, fight. You throw them two knives and put 20 in the center.
Yeah.
You know, there you go. But that's the madness that is modern world.
Yeah.
And with that, folks, we're going to wrap it up here. I think Antonio would agree. Unless I cut you off. But if you need to contact us, wish to contact us, tell us where we're wrong, tell them crazy, that you should be able to keep your language and not have to assimilate, and that Larry's a bigot and all this other horrible stuff. Kindly tell me on Twitter and Instagram at Larry King Undead on both places.
Yep, at Antonio Cinciolo for myself, facebook.com/AntKingFrequency to touch base with us, as well as email us podcast@AntKingFrequency.com. We'll talk to you next fortnight. Goodbye now.
Ant King Frequency, copyright 2019. by White Tiger Graphics.